Are you tired of being told what to think and how to act? Well, you are not alone. In case you haven't realized it, you have an internal GPS. It knows all you need to know about how to live your life. So it's about time you stopped letting the media and the government tell you what is true for you. In fact, it is exactly that time. It's time to think for yourself. And here to make sure you're doing just that is your host, mediator, author, and lawyer, Carol Gold.
Hi, it's Friday, September, 17th? I'm Carol Gold, and welcome to Think for Yourself. When I was growing up, I used to do a very weird thing. I used to read the dictionary for fun. I would think nothing of picking up the dictionary and just sitting and perusing words and learning definitions. It was something I just loved to do because I thought words were important and fascinating. So I was thinking this week about the use of words by governments and the use of words to instill a certain image or concept in people's minds. And a couple of the things that came to my mind were use of the word war in connection with the war on poverty, the war on drugs, and the war on terror. And I did a little homework and wanted to share with you that the war on poverty, in case you're not aware, was begun under the President Johnson administration. It is 5+ decades old. We've spent in excess of $22 trillion. And if I just take 1 year in particular as a snapshot, because there are statistics for that year, in 2013, the government spent $943 billion providing cash and food and housing and medical care to poor and low-income Americans. Now, that does not include Social Security and Medicare, just the categories I named. More than 100 million people, or about a third or a little less than a third of the population of the United States, received that type of supplemental assistance. The average cost was $9,000 per recipient. If we converted all of that into pure cash, that spending would have been 5 times the amount it would have needed to eliminate all poverty in the U.S. So the war on poverty was incredibly unsuccessful and inefficient, but most importantly, unsuccessful. If we then move on to the war on drugs, which happened, actually that began during President Richard Nixon's administration, that was around, I think it was 1971, so that's more than 4 decades old. We've spent more than $1 trillion on interdiction policies for drugs coming into the United States at a cost to U.S. taxpayers of more than $51 billion, and that's annually. We have still unrestrained illegal importing of fentanyl across our open southern border as I speak, where there are currently, as I speak, 12,000 Haitians sitting under a bridge in the Del Rio section of Texas. From 1999 to 2019, 841,000 people died from drug overdoses in the United States. And over 70% of overdose deaths involved opioid-like prescriptions, you know, fentanyl. The war on drugs is as successful as the war on poverty, or should I say, has been as unsuccessful. Again, we're talking about words. We call these wars on poverty, wars on drugs. Hopefully you go to war to eliminate the opposition, whatever that is. Because then we had, of course, the war on terror, which began under the George W. Bush administration and was our response to the 9/11 attacks. Afghanistan is more terror-infested and more powerful now than it was before the Taliban was toppled 5 years ago. Jihadists can train there and engage in terrorism now against we infidels in yet to be understood expanded ways. In fact, we now have 2 Afghanistans instead of 1. We have Iraq and we have Afghanistan. We went into Iraq and did the same thing. We went into Afghanistan. That's the true measure of Bush's failure. So the war on terror and the war on drugs and the war on poverty have all been incredibly unsuccessful. But most importantly, the word war was used. As I said, words are an important thing to me, because I think that when we use words correctly, not only are we eloquent, but we hopefully establish the truthfulness of a situation by accurately describing them through the correct choice of words. And I think when you call something a war, whether it's on terror or it's on drugs or it's on poverty, and you make it worse than it was before you started, not in terms of collateral damage, but in terms of the actual problem itself, when your efforts have exacerbated the very thing you sought to eradicate, something's very wrong with the choice of language. And then my brain moved on to climate change, which was a term begun in the 1960s, early 1970s. It was actually called inadvertent climate modification. And then, of course, it became global warming, which was first used, I think, around 1975. There was an article written by a scholar. I think he was a geochemist, Wallace Broecker, from Columbia University. And he used that term for the first time. And then in 2002, a Republican strategist, political strategist, Frank Luntz, wrote a memo that urged conservative politicians to begin using the term climate change over global warming because, as he said, quote, it's time for us to start talking about climate change instead of global warming and conservation instead of preservation. Climate change is less frightening than global warming. We now have climate change being used. Again, it's about choice of words, right? When global warming didn't work because it was temperatures were too cold, we had to pick new words. And so we picked climate change. And then there are all those arguments that are made as to the difference between weather and climate. And I'm not going to go down that road here. I just want to make the point of the selection of words often fits an agenda, and most often fits political agendas and agendas where marketing, advertising, even propaganda are the ultimate goal. So let me move on and bring it really current. Build Back Better. Build Back Better is not just Joe Biden's campaign slogan. Bill Clinton actually used that for the first time in 2006 when he was serving as our UN Special Envoy for Tsunami Recovery. And in 2015, that same phrase, Build Back Better, was promoted by the Japanese government as part of the United Nations Sendai Framework for Disaster Risk Reduction. That's a mouthful, but it was a UN program, and the slogan was Build Back Better. And it was talking about building better infrastructure following disasters like earthquakes and tsunamis. But it was an openly globalist concept that was promoting international cooperation, as well as what was called psychosocial support and mental health services in the aftermath of disasters. So it had a global use even back then. Currently, the UN has taken that phrase and morphed it into Build Back Better for a wide variety of policies. And the World Economic Forum has made it its mantra as well. So when Biden came along with Build Back Better, he was glamming on to a phrase that has slowly become an international or global movement that means certain things to certain elitist people. And if I was doing an outline and Build Back Better was Roman numeral one, then capital letter A under Roman numeral one would be the American Rescue Plan. Also, is Biden's term for supposedly a COVID rescue relief plan that was submitted to Congress, $1.9 trillion program, which just yesterday sent 39 million working moms and dads direct payment. Direct payment so they can supposedly buy food and medicine and whatever other basics they need. but it's actually a payment that combined with some other COVID relief payments and unemployment payments is making it more profitable for people to just stay home than it is for them to actually go out and get a job. So this incredible $1.9 trillion plan that was sold as emergency COVID response and stimulus, which passed the Senate over the weekend, even PolitiFact, which is a left-leaning liberal publication, said that almost all of the bill's spending is unrelated to the health effects of COVID-19. So why go into all that? Well, the answer is because words matter. And when you call something the American Rescue Plan and you sell it as a COVID relief package, but only a fraction of it actually goes to COVID relief, well, then you're misusing the language, you're misusing the words, and you're doing it for a reason. And the reason that you're doing it for is a political agenda, number one. Number two, it's to hide the truth behind the curtain of the words that are being deliberately chosen, deliberately manipulated, and deliberately marketed to give an impression that is false. Now, the other way in which words matter is when we prioritize them or when we use them and we don't understand their meaning. So let me just give you an example that I ran across this morning about this very thing. Nancy Pelosi said, she was in England yesterday and she was interviewed, and here's what she said. Yes, China has committed genocide against the Uyghurs. Having said that, the bigger overriding issue is working together with the Chinese on climate. Now, there's a couple of things in that sentence about the choice of words. Number one, when you use the word genocide, and then you use the word overriding, and you follow it by climate, there's something very wrong, either in your value system or in your negligence in how you expressed yourself, or in your deliberate arrogance in making a statement like that. Because think about what she said. She said that, yes, we know the Chinese are committing genocide against the Uyghurs in their country. But despite that fact, what's more important, the overriding issue, is to work with the Chinese on climate. Now, if this were 1940, it would be like saying, well, yes, the Nazis are committing genocide against the Jews. Having said that, the bigger overriding issue is working with the Nazis on maximizing use of railroads and their transport efficacy. I mean, who in their right mind says stuff like this? Not conscious people, not people who are pure of heart and pure of intention. Not compassionate, empathetic people. I can't believe Nancy Pelosi is so ignorant of the English language that she would have chosen those words to construct that sentence to convey precisely what she conveyed. Now, lastly, I want to go to the vaccines and the question of words mattering as well. Remember, I talked about Build Back Better, right? So last week, President Biden said, quote, I asked these governors to please help. He's talking about the governors who are pursuing COVID policies that differ from the federal government's official position on vaccine and COVID remedial approaches. So he said, I asked these governors to please help. If you're not going to help, at least get out of my way of those who are attempting to do the right thing, end quote. What does get out of my way mean? It means to the Biden administration that if you're a state that is using monoclonal antibodies, which are artificial antibodies injected into the body to cause it to respond to fight off COVID. So you're not getting a vaccine, which, by the way, isn't a vaccine. It's only an attempt to reduce symptoms if you get them. If you're not taking the vaccine approach, but you're allowing people to choose freely not to get a vaccine, and then they contract the disease, or even if they don't, even if they got the vaccine and then contract COVID, which can happen, monoclonal antibody infusions are incredibly effective at bringing those people back to health in a matter of days. I know two people who've had the infusion, and within 24 hours, they were feeling perfectly well again. So the Biden administration has a contract with Regeneron. They have a federal contract with Regeneron, meaning the federal government contracts with Regeneron, the company that makes monoclonal antibodies, at least one of the companies that has thus far, to buy from Regeneron directly to the federal government. Well, Biden just bought up everything Regeneron had, and then he cut the distribution to red states in half. He cut the distribution to those states that aren't going with the federal agenda of demanding that everybody be vaccinated. Get out of my way means I will not only personally crush you, Governor, I will put your citizens at risk. And I will cause more deaths in your state to prove that my mandate of everyone has to be vaccinated is the best and the only way to go. Also, from the Biden administration, compassion and humanitarianism. I know how those words are generally defined, but in the Biden administration, compassion and humanitarianism is defined as open borders, 200,000 illegals a month coming in across the southern border. No vaccinations for those people for COVID, despite the requirement that American citizens be vaccinated. 12,000 Haitians, all adult males, under a bridge in the Del Rio section of Texas. Border enforcement that is beyond overload. Fentanyl flowing freely into the U.S., there's the war on drugs, and 50% of the population of New York City, which are foreigners and who are on government supplements. So that's what compassion and humanitarianism is defined as through the Biden administration. Let me just recap on Just Build Back Better. The southern border is open, leaving Americans behind in Afghanistan, turning a blind eye to the Chinese genocide of the Uyghurs, people being paid to stay home rather than work, and not requiring illegals on the southern border and refugees from Afghanistan to be vaccinated, but forcing American citizens to be vaccinated. The war on poverty, the war on drugs, the war on terror, Build Back Better, climate change, the American Rescue Plan, compassion and humanitarianism. Words matter. You may not be able to do much about their choice as chosen by our politicians or our leaders in any capacity, but you can do an awful lot about words chosen by you every day in your communications with others. I'm reading a wonderful book called Nonviolent Communication. I don't have it in front of me. The last name is Rosenstein, I believe, or Rosenberg, the author. Mitchell, I think. Sorry, I don't have the book in front of me. Although if I keep talking, I have the book, I believe, on my cell phone, and I can probably tell you, or at least the cover of the book, tell you the actual name. Give me 10 seconds or less, and if I can't find it in those 10 seconds, there it is, Nonviolent Communication by Marshall B. Rosenberg. It's a wonderful book about choice of words. And in light of this episode, which is probably longer than any I've done so far, in light of this podcast, I'd close out by recommending that as you think for yourself and you scrutinize language as used by those who are leading us into supposedly a better future, you also pay pretty close attention to the words you use every day in conversations with strangers, in conversations with acquaintances, and in conversation with those you love. We can create a lot of damage, cause a lot of pain, or heal a lot of wounds by our choice of words. Choose smart. Think for yourself. I'm Carol Gold. Thanks for listening. I'll be back here again on Monday. And until then, of course, as always, think for yourself.
Carol thanks you for spending your valuable time with her. It is her mission to empower you to remember how smart and capable you are. Be sure to check out Carol's website, carolgold.com. That's Carol with an E, gold.com. Please leave a review and subscribe here so you'll be alerted to Carol's next podcast. Until then, above all else, remember, it's time to think for yourself.